Raw footage coming out of the cinema and into your ears.
35mm. Analog world. 35mm.
Welcome to the enhanced version of episode 3 of the Raw Footage Podcast. This is the film review show where I come straight out of the cinema and record my thoughts on the film I've just watched, and then share it with you, my lovely listeners. You could call it a stream of consciousness film review, and I hope you are enjoying these shows. I have a fairly diverse taste in cinema. I like stupid action films, and I like obscure indie arthouse films. And in this particular episode, we have both sides of my cinematic tastes represented. This is perhaps one of the strangest juxtapositions of films you are likely to come across, and I actually saw these films on the same day, so that made it even more strange. So, let's go on to the first review for this episode.
Oh boy, are you in for a special treat.
I think the easiest way to describe the first film on today's show is as a stupid blockbuster. But having said that, it's not your average stupid blockbuster, and perhaps has pretensions of rising above what it is. Before I start the review, a warning that there is an amber spoiler alert in this review, where I give away a minor plot point and discuss it. I don't think it will negatively impact your enjoyment of the film, but if you are excessively spoilerphobic, you can check the album art on the enhanced version and skip the spoiler section. The first film for today is Anonymous, and here's the trailer.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word?
Cells, all listening to the writings of one man, the ideas of one man. That's power, Robert!
Since when did words ever win a kingdom, Edward?
Leave that to me.
Of Oxford does not write plays.
If this is to be done, it must be done carefully, skillfully.
In my world, one does not write plays. People like you do.
Will Shakespeare.
Congratulations. You've had an epic poem published today.
What? Do you mean like in a book?
Mark my words, Edward has done this for a purpose.
Prevail with Elizabeth.
I need more money.
I beg your pardon.
If your lordship does not agree, then I shall be forced to make certain facts public.
William Shakespeare! Fraud! Charlatan!
He came to me, Ben.
He came to me.
He could have been a king.
Except for the fact that you were you.
None of your plays will ever carry your name. None.
So once again, you find me in a park next to the River Avon. but this one isn't in leafy Bath. It's actually right next to a retail park on the outskirts of Bristol. I decided to make a road trip to Bristol today to see a very, very small release film, which I'm going to see later, but to make it a bit more worth my while and my travel expenses, I decided to make it a double bill. So I've just come out of Anonymous at the Showcase Multiplex on the outskirts of Bristol. And before I get onto Anonymous, can I just take this opportunity to say that the more different cinemas I visit, the more I find that Odeon is pretty much the worst for customer satisfaction. The local cinema in Bath, the big one, is an Odeon. And the more cinemas I visit, the more I realise that Odeon crams its customers into tiny seats, which are very uncomfortable, and just doesn't give a shit. Whereas the Showcase I've just been in, the seats were very comfortable, they were nicely spaced. And I could say the same for Cineworld cinemas, where I saw We Need to Talk About Kevin in London. That was a Cineworld cinema. And they too have much better seating arrangements than the Odeon does. I think the one downside to the Showcase experience is that that is the first film in a long, long time that hasn't been digitally projected. It was a traditional film, you know, 35mm film or whatever they use to project onto screens. And I didn't realise how much of a difference that made. I mean, I've always been of the opinion that traditional film and digital projection is pretty much the same. When, after that experience, it really, really isn't. You can really tell the difference. I mean, granted, Anonymous has been out for a week and it's nearing the end of its run, so perhaps the film's just been through the projector one too many times. But it was rather scratched, it was rather jumpy, and compared to the digital experience, it's very, very second rate. So, bad Odeon, basically. Although, I do appreciate the fact that all Odeons have digital projection now. So, with my complaints about my cinema experience out of the way, although it wasn't a bad experience, I was the only one in this 1 o'clock showing of Anonymous. How about the actual film? Now, Anonymous takes the premise that William Shakespeare didn't write any of his plays. This is a minority view held amongst academics, but it is a fairly well-respected one. There are some fairly well-respected academics who genuinely believe that William Shakespeare did not write his plays. There have been a lot of candidates for people saying that they are the true author of Shakespeare's plays rather than Shakespeare. But the connection they all have is that they're all aristocrats. So I fundamentally disagree with this premise that Shakespeare didn't write his plays, because as far as I can tell, the main reason why people think Shakespeare didn't write his plays is pure snobbery. They just don't believe that a working-class grammar school boy from Stratford-upon-Avon could write this amazing verse. And the candidates that Anonymous is putting forward as the true author of Shakespeare's plays is the Earl of Oxford. So I was kind of interested in seeing Anonymous because it just seems such a bizarre prospect, especially when I found out that it was directed by Roland Emmerich. Now, he is the master of the brainless action film. He's got on his CVs such gems as Godzilla, The Day After Tomorrow, 2012, and of course, the pretty much the original brainless action film, Independence Day. So to discover that he was doing a film about Shakespeare was kind of unusual. And I've also heard that it wasn't a passion project of his. It was more a case of, you know, he didn't care about Shakespeare at all. He just got the scripts and liked it, so he wanted to do it. So it's a very odd choice. And I was curious to see if he could actually pull it off. And if you can enjoy a film when you fundamentally and vehemently disagree with its premise and actually find it kind of offensive. So that was kind of the test I set this film. Can I enjoy this film when I fundamentally disagree with it and when I think the director is out of his depth? And I have to say, the answer is no. This film is utter, utter bollocks. It has almost no redeeming features whatsoever. The script is clunky and perfunctory. The first 10 minutes of the film are basically made up of characters saying, "Oh, look, there's the Earl of Southampton. Don't you want to shag him? Oh, hello, Kit Marlowe. How are you doing?" It doesn't let you explore this world. It just tells you bluntly who everybody is and what they're doing. It is just the worst, clunkiest script writing I have ever seen in my life. And then as the film develops, you realise that it doesn't develop. Everybody is black and white. Everything is a one-note character. They have one characteristic and they pursue it to death. It takes all the worst elements of the Da Vinci Code and puts it into Shakespearean times. Now, I actually enjoyed reading the Da Vinci Code, because as I was reading it, I knew it was bollocks, but it was entertaining bollocks. Whereas this, it's just astonishing that you can make this film out of all these tiny little bits of information. I mean, there's lots of tiny little bits of evidence which are true, which do come from reality, but it's twisted and moulded into such a bizarre, strange scenario that it's just completely unbelievable. If Shakespeare was alive today, he would sue. I mean, this is such a character assassination of Shakespeare. I genuinely, truly believe that he was a working class grammar school boy from Stratford-upon-Avon who just happened to have a true genius for language. And the fact that there is a big budget, legitimate film out there saying he did none of it is heartbreaking. And Shakespeare in this film is an astonishingly bad character and a badly written character. He's played by Ralph Spall, who I do actually really rate as an actor. I mean, and there are so many actors in this film who I do rate as actors. But I just really want to know how much of their agreeing to do this film was for the money. But I'll get onto that in a minute. So Ralph Spall plays Shakespeare. And he is portrayed as a complete buffoon throughout sort of 80-90% of the performance. But for the other 20-10%, he is portrayed as a ruthless, calculating figure who will do absolutely anything to get famous. When at the start of the the film. That doesn't really seem to be a characteristic of his. He is just a buffoon. So this juxtaposition between the two aspects of Shakespeare's character just doesn't fit and it doesn't work. I mean, and I'll give away a tiny spoiler here, but it is also heavily implicated in this film that William Shakespeare killed Kit Marlowe. Which is astonishingly stupid. It is well established that Kit Marlowe was killed in a street brawl, and there is some evidence to suggest that he was killed because he was working as a spy. But to suggest that William Shakespeare killed him because he was about to expose the fact that Shakespeare didn't write his plays just comes out of complete left field. And when Shakespeare has, up until that point, been portrayed as such a buffoon, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't work. It's just so frustrating. This could have been an entertaining film. It could have been entertaining bollocks. But there's so much of it which is badly written, badly put together, and takes these little tiny historical factual pieces and twists them into such a mess that it just isn't entertaining. The one truly great piece of this film is the opening scene. And after seeing it, I was thinking, ooh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this will be entertaining. It is such a meta opening. We see Derek Jacobi in modern day New York get out of a taxi cab and go into a theatre. Not a cinema, a theatre. And outside it says Anonymous, and it's got the poster displayed above it. So it's kind of as if this film was a theatrical performance. And Derek Jacobi goes in, goes on stage and starts being the narrator, saying there is this theory out there that Shakespeare didn't write his plays and we're going to tell you about it. And all the time he's on stage and doing this, you've got people in the background, you know, in the costumes and doing the preparation for a stage play, including the person in the film who plays Ben Johnson, who has a critical role in Anonymous. Is the bigger, one of the bigger roles is Ben Johnson. So the actor who's playing Ben Johnson is on stage, and as Derek Jacobi finishes his opening monologue, Ben Johnson goes on stage, and then we expand out and we realise we're actually in the cinema, the film experience. It is a brilliant opening, and I just wish the rest of the film held up and was as good. And I have to say, I am bitterly, bitterly disappointed in Derek Jacobi for agreeing to do this. And also Vanessa Redgrave, who plays the old Queen Elizabeth I. I personally have seen both of those actors on stage in the Theatre Royal in Bath doing Shakespeare and doing it superbly. Macbeth, played by Derek Jacobi, was brilliant. And I saw Vanessa Redgrave doing Antony and Cleopatra opposite David Harewood. And they were stunning and are truly astonishing, great Shakespearean actors of our generation, or perhaps, to be fair, the last generation. But still, they are highly respected Shakespearean actors. And also Mark Rylance has a fairly big role in this as well, and he's one of the current great Shakespearean actors on the British stage. So we have all these Shakespearean actors appearing in this film, basically shitting on the history and the memory of Shakespeare, who gave us all these wonderful words. And oh, was the conservatory really worth it, is all I've got to say. So maybe I went in to the film expecting it to be bad, but I hope I gave it every opportunity. But it wasn't a good experience. I didn't enjoy it at all, apart from the very comfy seating and the fact I was alone in the screening. It was actually a bizarre experience. When I first got there, it seemed like there was just two members of staff in this vast multiplex and me, which it's kind of like a ghost town at 1 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. So yeah, not a good film. And I'm not off now to the Art House Cinema in the centre of Bristol to see the second of my double bill and the main reason for my coming into Bristol. It's strange how the less I like a film, the more I seem to talk about it. And apart from anything else, one thing that this film should be criticised for is the fact that for the next 10 years, English professors will be asked about this film as if it was true, and they will have to deal with the fact that the cinema-going public thinks that Shakespeare didn't actually write any of his plays. And for adding extra work onto English professors, I think this film should definitely be criticised. So we've had the brainless action film for the day. Let's have the art house film.
I'm feeling adventurous tonight. Let's take things a little further, shall we?
The second film for today is the Mexican film Miss Bala. And I should point out that during the recording of my review, my recorder failed briefly. But I only missed three words, so I've put them back in later. It sounds a little odd and a little disconcerting, but those are the only three words that were missed, so I've put them back in. At this point, I would usually play the trailer for the film. But since this is a Mexican film, and therefore the trailer is in Spanish, there doesn't seem much point in playing it in an English language podcast. So I'll just go straight on to my review. This is what I thought of Miss Bala. So now you find me in the lovely quayside area of Bristol. I'm sitting just across the river from the Watershed Cinema, which is the big art house cinema here in the centre of Bristol. And continuing my theme from this afternoon, the cinema experience was kind of interesting in the Watershed. I think that's possibly the smallest cinema screen I've ever been in. It was 40 seats, very, very comfortable seats, I have to say, but it was a very small room. So the screen size was somewhere between a really, really big television and a really, really small cinema screen. It was possibly the smallest cinema screen I've ever seen. But it was digitally projected, so that was something. And it was an interesting experience where I saw Miss Bala. Now, this was the film I came all the way over to Bristol to see. I had never heard of it before, but a couple of weeks ago on the Film 2011 show, they gave it a glowing review. And then I also saw it on the list of films that had been submitted to the Best Foreign Language Oscar committee. So, given the glowing review it got, I have a sneaking suspicion it might be nominated for Best Foreign Language Film at next year's Oscars. Especially as it is Mexican. And the favourite for last year's Oscars was Beautiful, which was also a Mexican film. So, given that it got a glowing review and given that it could well be nominated for Best Foreign Language Oscar, and the releasing of foreign language films is so erratic here in the UK that you basically watch them when you can. So I decided to come over and watch it. And I have to say, it does remind me a lot of Beautiful, which is not necessarily a good thing, because I really, really hated Beautiful. It was just so unremittingly bleak that I found very little redeeming qualities in it. I mean, Javier Bardem was nominated for Best Actor for Beautiful last year, and yeah, he probably deserved it, but the film itself was just so heavy going that I found very little appealing about it. And I kind of feel the same way about Miss Bala. That's not to say I disliked Miss Bala as much as I disliked Beautiful, but it is very heavy going. There's very little redemption, there's very little joy in this film. It follows the story of a teenage girl, no, she's not teenage, she's 23, but a young woman from Tijuana in Baja California, who wants to be a beauty queen. It's a simple dream, and she is beautiful enough to do it. I mean, the actress is named Stephanie Seligman, and as far as I'm aware, she is a model, and this is her first acting role. And I have to say, she does a very good performance in this role. So this young woman wants to be a beauty queen, is very poor, and that's kind of the initial setup. She finds herself in the wrong place at the wrong time, gets involved in a drug cartel shootout at a nightclub, and from this she comes under the power of the local drug kingpin, who makes her a mule and makes her drive bodies around and so on. And it's kind of the tale of how she copes with being under the thumb of this dangerous man. And that's kind of the problem. Right at the start of the relationship between the girl Laura and the drug kingpin, it's hard to understand why they connect with each other. I mean, that's the wrong word, but I can't think of a better one. I mean, obviously, later in the story, it becomes clear that she can be a mule, so that's something for the drug kingpin to latch onto. But right at the start, there doesn't really seem to be any reason for the drug kingpin to take any notice of her. And equally, there doesn't really seem to be any reason why Laura is so acquiescent to this drug kingpin. She does very little to help herself. She does very little to save herself. I mean, yes, you can argue that she can't do anything to save herself. She is completely powerless in this situation. But I'd like a bit more. She is too acquiescent and too accepting of what this kingpin makes her do. And I'd like a little bit more. She has this sort of terrified expression throughout the whole film, and it never really changes. She doesn't really develop. So I do have issues with this film, and like I said, it is unremittingly bleak, although it does have a quite an ambiguous ending. I was coming out of the screening and I heard people discussing the ending, and they had a completely different interpretation of the final scene, although it was equally valid to the one that I came away with. So that's something to consider. But still, I'd like a bit more. One reason why I think this does have a very, very good chance of being on the shortlist for Best Foreign Language Film at the Oscars next year is it has a very, very strong directorial mark. It's directed by a man called Gerardo Naranjo, who I've never heard of before, I must admit, but he has a very interesting style. He is in love with excessively long shots. He uses tracking shots, he uses elaborate panning shots, he uses steadicam shots all the time, just taking a particular scene as far as he possibly can before cutting. And the majority of the time, this really works. It emphasizes the emotion of the scene, it emphasizes the danger of the scenes. But some of the time he does it and you're thinking to yourself, you're just having this excessively long shot for the sake of it. You're doing it because that's the way you make films. You're not doing it because what we're seeing on screen deserves this excessively long, elaborately plotted panning shot or steadicam shot. So it's a very interesting visual style. It works 95% of the time. But the other 5%, you're thinking, you're just showing off at the moment, aren't you? And I think this film also works very well as a character study. But it's not a character study of the main girl, Laura, because frankly, she doesn't actually have a lot of character. She, like I said, she remains the same throughout the film. What it is a character study of is Mexico itself. This is a world where the drug cartels can do whatever the hell they like because the vast majority of the policemen and the DEA agents who are around them are corrupt and are letting them get away, literally, with murder. So you never know who you can trust, you never know whose side anybody is on at any one time. And it's a very interesting, but like I said, a very bleak view and a bleak interpretation of what life is like in modern Baja California. And when I get home, I'm gonna look up the title of this film, because the title of the film is Miss Bala, but the crown she's going for is Miss Baja, as in Baja California. So I think there might be a play on words in the title, but I'm going to have to check on that when I get home. So overall, very visually interesting. It's a film with a strong directorial stamp. But I'm not sure it says very much. The characters don't develop as much as I'd like, and this is a film with so little hope that I find it very hard to warm to. But in its credit, I do like it a lot more than I liked Beautiful. So I guess that's all I've got to say about Miss Bala. And let's see if it is nominated in next year's Foreign Language Oscar list. A couple of things that I'll comment on regarding Miss Bala. I did look up the title, and it is actually quite clever. Miss Bala translates as Miss Bullet. So that kind of sums up the film in some ways, and is a nice play on words between Bala and Baha. And the other thing I'll comment on is one of these situations where, on further reflection, I've had a new idea. One thing that I think would have improved this film immensely is if at some point Laura had completely broken down and just despaired at her situation. I think the main problem I had with the film is that she is so passive and lets herself be taken down these dangerous paths without seeming to care too much. I'm sure this was a directorial choice and he was going for the numbness of her situation. But if she had completely broken down at some point, at least I would have felt that her situation mattered to her and she was actually concerned about what she was doing. And looking back on the film, I know the exact point at which I think this should have happened. There's a scene where she does cry for a bit, but if she had completely broken down at that point and just completely despaired, I personally think it would have been a much better film. So that last little bit probably goes against the philosophy of raw footage a little bit, but it's my podcast and I can break my own rules if I want, I guess. So that was raw footage, and I'll see you the next time I come out of the cinema and into your ears. Raw footage is an Ouroboros podcast production. Intro music is by Oliver Benjamin Thayer. Outro music by Vicky, both used with permission. Idents by Dr. Brandy Sexy Voice of the Inside Outcast. Trailer audio is included under the doctrine of fair use.